Chapter 4. Brotherhood. The Voice. Flight of the Termite.
The Emperor created us for a specific purpose. When the events of the universe unfold in such a manner that we may fulfill that purpose, it is not a coincidence, nor is it predestination. It is the logical conclusion of our existence. We must know that purpose, and in the full understanding of who we are, embrace the duty that comes with that understanding.
Vulcan, Prometheus Reconsidered. In the Strategium of the Flamewrought, Vulcan looked at his assembled praetors. There were 7 of them, a division that honored the great sanctuary cities of Nocturne. Raitan was present too. Vulcan wanted the Igniacs to bear witness to every important phase of this mission. Of all his sons, it was most important that Raitan see and understand the truth of what he was seeking to accomplish. A hololithic representation of Antium and the Orc vessels dominated the Tacticarium table. At its corners, Pict screens were updating with new Auspex readings as the Nocturnian force drew closer to its target.
"This is the entirety of the Orc fleet," said Reth Shomar.
The Lord Protector of Hesiod's sharp features were accentuated by his shorn scalp and jagged spike of a beard.
"It is," Vulcan answered. "Your brothers have achieved the extraordinary. They have held the Orcs at Antium, all of them, and so spared the inhabited worlds of Taras."
"I see no sign of the Terran fleet,"
said Tukaren Nashor of Epithemus. His eyes were deep shadows under his heavy brow, and they glinted red, reflecting the light from the screen.
"There is none,"
Raitan confirmed. He pointed to a cluster of readings a relatively short distance from the Orcs.
"That looks like a debris cloud, does it not?"
"It does,"
Saral Kalmar of Claymin said.
"So the Terrans must be at their limit, if they survive at all."
His voice was harsh as the rasp of a saw blade.
"The Orcs continue to attack a death world," Vulcan said. "Therefore someone is fighting them."
He spoke evenly, without directly chiding Kalmar. The Lord Protector was being honest in his appraisal of the situation, and Vulcan did not want that vital exchange between officers to suffer. At the same time, he could make it clear that the mission was the rescue of the 18th, as much as it was the defeat of the Orcs. Now he pointed at the attack moon.
"That is the center of the Orc force. It is their greatest strength, and it is their greatest weakness. If they lose this base, they lose everything. So, we shall take it from them."
As Vulcan spoke, the data stream to the hololith updated again, and the detail of the Orc structure increased in resolution. Scars appeared on the uneven surface of the agglomeration. Shomar leaned forwards, frowning.
"What is that?"
he said, pointing to a particularly large wound on the attack moon.
"A ship?"
Raitan wondered. Vulcan eyed the close-up of the scan on the Pict screen to his left. The data stream updated again, and the details became clear. There was wreckage, enough intact to be recognizable.
"An Imperial battleship," Vulcan said.
While on Terra, he had made a study of the records of the 18th. He knew its vessels. At the time of its departure for the Taras division, the 18th had only one battleship.
"That is the Klostzets," he said.
The solemn silence around the Tacticarium table lasted several seconds.
"They rammed it," said Nashor.
Vulcan nodded.
"They must have tried at the end to break the crust of the attack moon."
"If they failed," Raitan said, "if even a battleship could not crack that defense, then how are we to..."
He trailed off, and Vulcan watched his face change as he realized how the 18th Nocturne would succeed. He stared back at Vulcan in astonishment. Vulcan smiled.
"We knew we would be fighting Orcs," he said. "Orcs that have held a legion at bay. For such work, one must prepare the correct tools."
He looked at the rest of his commanders.
We have the weapons we need to annihilate the Xenos fleet. And we have arrived in the Taras system at precisely the moment your Terran brothers have the greatest need of us.
Suddenly, the praetors all seemed to have trouble meeting each other's eyes.
You still have your doubts, Vulcan said.
There was a noticeable difference between the praetors' readiness for battle and the way they mentioned the Terran 18th. None of them questioned the mission, but they could not disguise the fact that they did not think the Terrans would still be alive by the time the Nocturnians made planetfall. He met Raitan's pained eyes, and with a nod, reminded him to speak freely.
Your doubts are universal, Vulcan said.
That is not what I would have wished.
Never be ashamed of reality.
Then he addressed the praetors.
You do not believe we will rescue the 18th.
My lord Primarch, said Shomar, the Auspex readings are clear. The orcs have landed in overwhelming numbers, even if no more arrived.
Vulcan held up a hand.
I see the scans too, Rith. My conclusions differ. I know your brothers will hold, and you will reach them. I understand, too, that you do not believe we will get there in time. You do me then a great honor by being no less willing to fight.
We believe in our victory, my lord Primarch. We believe in you.
Our forging will be complete in this battle, said Kalmar. Yes, Vulcan said slowly and deliberately. Yes, it will be. Lord Protector Shomar and Kalmar, I want you and 8 companies to join me in the attack on the Orc base. With 1,000 legionaries, we will pierce that structure to its core. Once we are at sufficient depth, we will place seismic charges.
How many will we need?
Shomar asked.
7 of the ones we have on this ship will suffice.
The seismic charges on the Flamewrought were also one of Vulcan's modifications of design. They were several times larger than the standard battlefield seismic charge. It took 2 legionaries to carry each bomb, and the explosives were an order of magnitude more powerful than their smaller kin.
They must detonate simultaneously, and not from a single point.
Vulcan held up a fist.
Once we reach our target depth, 1 company will remain with me, and we will fight to keep the Greenskins' focus on us. The rest of the strike force will radiate out from that position and place the charges at a distance.
He opened his fingers wide.
That will ensure the extent and pressure of interior rupturing required to shatter the Greenskin base to dust. How far will we travel from your center? Said Kalmar. That we cannot know until we discover the composition and density of the attack moon.
The 2 praetors nodded.
These hulks, Vulcan went on, will be the targets for the boarding assaults by the rest of you.
He tapped the controls of the Tacticarium table, lighting up conglomerations of wrecks that were smaller than the base, but still huge troop carriers.
So ordered, the praetors said in unison, committing themselves to the war that would hammer the untempered blade of the Legion into its most perfect self.
On Vaughn's instructions, the command module of the Cauldron had been made his permanent residence. He was anchored to a mobile Medicase lab, tangles of tubes and mechadendrites feeding stims and fluids into him. Nothing seemed to be able to counteract the pain. Through determination alone, Vaughn made himself think coherently. Nothing mattered except his duty to his brothers, and now he had to consider the new reality of another fleet in the system. He wanted to believe it represented aid for the 18th, but his legion had been left to fight on its own for so long, he could not assume the best. The ships might be hostile. He would see the truth of this event, and he would see the battle to its end. His end had not come on the Hill of Tanks. He had a last chance to preserve his honour, and he accepted the agony as the price of terminal redemption.
Keep me awake, he ordered Fimbros.
I can keep you awake, the apothecary said. I don't know how long I can keep you alive.
I don't know how long I can keep any of us alive, Vaughn answered.
Numion entered the chamber.
The orcs are massing again, he said.
Vaughn's lips pulled back in frustration. Every instinct pushed him to rise from the Medicaid bed and don his armour. He managed to raise his head, but his arms and legs remained motionless.
"Lord Commander," said Numion,
waiting respectfully for orders. Relinquishing control of the field was agony. It was not the wounded pride of command that he felt. It was the sense that he was no longer fighting alongside his brothers. But he had turned the battlefield over to Numion, and that decision was the right one. He had full confidence in Numion. He could release his grip on consciousness and let himself try to heal. Except he could not. He would not surrender to oblivion while the war yet raged.
"What are your plans?" he asked.
"We still have enough tank and infantry companies for a targeted sortie. We will use the cauldron as bait and assault the orc flanks as they lay siege to our gates. We have found routes down the slopes to the east and west. The lava flow has changed the landscape enough to offer that possibility at least."
Vaughan nodded, picturing the strategy, approving. He would have done the same.
"That will slow them," he said.
"Will the tactics slow them enough, do you think?"
Numion glanced at the screen that showed the estimated positions of the approaching fleet.
"Enough for what?"
Vaughan asked.
"To meet our reinforcements or our new enemies?"
"Either,"
said Numion.
"Make sure it does," Vaughan said. "I will know the truth, First Captain. If I have to tear orc throats out with my teeth, I will know the truth."
With T'Kel at his side, Vulcan walked down the hall towards the starboard launch bay of the Flamewrought. He had sought out the Forge Master in his quarters, where T'Kel had been preparing for embarkation, and told him that he would be the pilot of the great engine. Now they were making their way to where the machine waited.
"Thank you, Lord Primarch, for this honour," said the Forge Master.
"You have earned it. You know the vehicle better than anyone else in the Legion."
"Not anyone, Lord Primarch."
"I meant exactly what I said. It would be tactically wrong for me to assign anyone else as pilot. Nor do I wish it."
T'Kel bowed his head.
"Then, with thanks, I will pilot this piece of the 18th Legion's history."
Vulcan placed a hand on T'Kel's shoulder.
"You will pilot it into our Legion's future."
The launch bay of the Flamewrought had been modified to accommodate the huge vehicle. One of the bulkheads had been opened up so the machine's great length could fit into a single gargantuan chamber. Vulcan stood on a dais beside the open hatch in the forward section of the weapon and addressed the serried ranks of legionaries. His voice needed no amplification, and it boomed against the distant walls of the bay.
"My sons," he said, "when I had this machine brought from Mars to Nocturne, I told you of the modifications we needed, of the improvements that were to be made. Your labors have made me proud. Though the function of the machine needs no explanation, I did not tell you then of its provenance or of its history. I will tell you now, because it is important to mark that we begin a new chapter in the Legion's history, but not a new book. There is continuity from the past to the future of the 18th, and we find that continuity in this great engine. For this is the Termite Spear of Fire."
"You are aware, I know, of the Terran 18th's reputation. How its legionaries appear to seek out the most desperate of battles?
Perhaps they do. And perhaps that is as things should be. Are we not made to withstand that which no others could? We are the ones who, when all else have fallen, will stand and declare, 'This far, no further. Not one more step.' So it was when the 18th fought by the side of the Emperor on Terra, using this machine and others of its kind. With the Termites, they stormed the underground tempest galleries of the Ethnarchy of the Caucasus Wastes. They broke through what had seemed impenetrable, and when, on the surface, all but the Emperor had deemed the 18th lost, its warriors returned in triumph, bursting through a volcano near the city of Klostzatz. The battleship that proudly bore the name of that city
The name that represented this victory died attempting to shatter another impenetrable barrier. Now we will complete that task. The termite will grind through the defenses of a foe once more. But now, with your work and the actions of our forges on Nocturne, this ship will do so much more. The technology of Terra is united to the craftwork of Nocturne. And look at this wonder, my sons. There is no fortress that can stand before this, not on any world. Think of the cataclysmic might we have created. Now that the termite can also travel through the void, think what it means that before us is a boarding torpedo that can carry 1,000 warriors. Think what we will do to the enemy. Do you hear me, my sons?
We hear you, Lord Primarch.
Then let us go. Let me hear in your march the beat of the great hammer of the 18th Legion. Let me hear the sounds of its forge.
As the chosen 1,000 boarded the Spear of Fire, Vulcan ships closed with the orc swarm. The fleet was no larger than the one the 18th had brought to defend the Taras Division more than a year ago. But these ships were newly launched from the yards of Mars, and they too had been reworked by the forge masters of Nocturne. They were fresh to battle, and they came upon a surprised enemy. Following Vulcan's plan, the fleet came at the orcs not as a spear to drive into the heart of the enemy, but as an oblique hammer blow. The greenskin ships reacted as the first torpedoes fell upon them, peeling away from Antium to attack the new threat. And so the first stage of Vulcan's strategy began to bear fruit, as the landings on Antium diminished. The fleet drew nearer the swarm, and the angle of its approach became even more pronounced, and now the ships had their flanks to the greenskins. A wide barrage struck the orcs. The near orbit of the planet burst with explosions, and scores of ships were destroyed. The orc swarm broke away from the world like a cloud of furious wasps, and gave chase as the 18th ships appeared to overshoot Antium, then begin to turn away. The Legion's fleet accelerated, putting distance between it and the orcs, getting the space it needed to turn around and attack again. At the moment of the Flamerort's closest approach to Antium, just before it began its turn, the termite dropped from its hull and sped towards the attack moon. Its cylindrical hull was 800 meters long. In appearance, it was forged from wrought iron that was black as coal, the engravings on its surface limned with bronze and gold. Its walls were meters thick, composite plates of adamantium and ceramite. The engines for void navigation that had been added on Nocturne formed a ring around its aft section, surrounding the primary ground propulsion system. Shielded sensors ran the length of the windowless hull, feeding knowledge of the termite's surroundings to the pilot's compartment, which was just aft of the drill head. The chromed adamantium cone was immense, larger at its base than a stormbird and twice as long. At the same time that the Spear of Fire left its berth, so did a stream of boarding torpedoes, making for their own targets. Vulcan stood in the chamber behind Forge Master Tekel's pilot's throne aboard the Spear of Fire. He hunched forwards to keep his head below the curved roof. From this position, he could see all the picked screens at a glance. They were arranged in a horseshoe formation around the throne, though Tekel's focus was on the large screen before him, which displayed the view ahead of the termite. Vulcan tracked the movements of the fleets. The barrage was having the desired effect. The orcs, in their anger, were abandoning the attack moon. The only threat they saw was the fleet. Vulcan had calculated the Spear of Fire's path carefully. It ran parallel to the bombardment. He was counting on the orcs dismissing the termite as yet another projectile. They showed little interest in trying to intercept torpedoes and cannon shells. Defense seemed to be an unknown concept to the greenskins. All they knew was to attack. And so their ships went after the sources of the projectiles, rather than the projectiles themselves. The Spear of Fire flew through the cloud of orc vessels.
"Those are not ships," Tekel muttered. They're detritus.
He spoke with the anger of the offended craftsman. Vulcan did not blame him. Every ship that appeared on the picked screens defied any concept of voidworthiness. Their shapes turned the hololithic diagrams into scrawls. Some of the ships had once been human, while others included portions of recognizable craft.
I cannot even call them diseased, said Tekel.
No, Vulcan agreed. That would imply they were once whole.
The ships were wreckage that flew. Components hurled together with no thought, no logic. There was no uniformity to any of them.
They're a perversion of craft, Tekel said.
They are the products of brute chance. These are merely the ones that function. Who knows how many thousands never left the ground?
Tekel feathered the controls, using the engines only when he absolutely had to, preserving the illusion of an outsized torpedo. Then the spear of fire came through the swarm, and the way was clear to the attack moon. The two fleets came within range of each other, and Vulcan watched as the screens coldly relayed the impact of large-scale void war. The leading edge of the Orc horde came apart, ships disappearing into fireballs, exploding into storms of shrapnel. The Orcs flew so close together that the death of a single vessel led to chain reactions. Vulcan's fleet came at the Orcs and curved again, broadsiding the enemy, then turning away. The Flamewrought and its escorts began the manoeuvre long before the Orcs came anywhere close to their positions. The battleship was so massive, its momentum so great, that its turning circle was tens of thousands of kilometres wide. The change in direction had to begin before it was needed. This was why Vulcan had rehearsed the strategies of the battle in detail with Ochi. He had seen the unhappy look on the shipmaster's face as Vulcan unfolded the pattern to him in the Primarch's quarters.
"You are displeased," Vulcan had said.
"The extraction strategy is daring, Lord Primarch, and we will do you proud. But, with respect, the tactics until then feel like a series of retreats."
"It is quite the opposite. Antium is the ground we seek to hold."
"But we are not yet on it," said Ochi.
"We are," Vulcan had told him. "The 18th is on Antium, fighting desperately. And this world is the line that protects the rest of the Taras system. You will draw the Orcs away from Antium. This will relieve your brothers on the ground and clear the path for us. This is not a retreat. It is an advance. The Orcs will be losing ground when they pursue. They will not know it, but it is they who will be relinquishing territory."
Now, on the Termite, the picked screen readouts could not convey the majesty of the Flamewrought, but Vulcan could picture it in his mind's eye. He hoped Ochi could see what he was forging. This tactic was no blunt blade of war. It was finely crafted. It was worthy of pride. The Imperial ships turned slowly, but their engines were far more powerful than the Orcs, and as they accelerated once more, they put distance again between themselves and the enemy. Then they turned to port, delivering another broadside, and then they were face on. The Orcs were firing constantly, turning the void white with the intensity of their weapons. On the picked screens, the war frozen into still images as the data updated, Vulcan saw the flare of void shields. Runes changed second by second, breaking the battle down to vectors and damage estimates.
"We are holding, Lord Primarch," Ochi voxed. "We will keep them here."
"And we will stab at their heart," said Vulcan.
The attack moon drew closer. The target site was the impact of the Klostsats. Though the battleship had failed, the shell of the Orc base would still be weakened where the vessel had hit, and to break open the crust at that site would pay tribute to the loss and the bravery of the Klostsats' final sacrifice. Not all the Orc ships had left to pursue the 18th fleet. Small transports were continuing to land Xenos troops on Antium. As the larger ships were emptied of their complement of infantry, they left orbit to join in the void war.
"No landings from the attack moon," Vulcan commented.
"Is that suggestive?"
Tekel asked.
"Unless its forces are already on the planet, then the full strength is still in the Greenskin base, and there is a much greater invasion to come.
There will be plenty to welcome us, then, said Tikal.
Indeed, Vulcan said, and that many more to be destroyed.
An orc ship that had finished unloading now whipped around the attack moon on its way towards the fleets. Its trajectory brought it in line with the termite. Vulcan eyed its path carefully, and when the orc vessel changed its route slightly, he said,
They have seen us.
The orc ship was coming directly at the machine. The termite was armed, but its las cannons and twin-linked heavy bolters, which would be devastating against infantry and armor on the ground, were futile against a void ship.
I can try to evade, said Tikal.
No. Take us through that ship.
The forge master grinned.
With pleasure, Lord Primarch.
Tikal engaged the termite's drill head. A rapid vibration ran through the bulkheads and the deck. It set Vulcan's teeth on edge, but it was also a satisfying sound. It was powerful. It drew from the entire strength and length and mass of the termite. It was not just the spin of the drill head that would strike the enemy. It was all the momentum of the termite, its monstrous totality, just as it was not the hammer itself that would crush an enemy, but the force of the blow. The orc ship neared, its cannons firing madly. Shells smacked against the hull of the termite, shaking it violently.
These glancing blows will mar our fine artwork, said Tikal. They insult us.
Then return the insult in full, Vulcan said.
The spear of fire ploughed into the bow of the enemy ship. The picked screens struggled to keep up with the flood of updates from the sensors. A juddering series of still images showed Vulcan the death of the orc vessel. They were static-riven, yet vivid impressions of rent metal and explosions. The vibrations of the hull grew more violent as it passed through the ship, tearing it open as a hunter's blade guts the belly of a Leonid. The vessel peeled back, until its ragged halves fell away, bleeding bodies and gases into the frozen void. The termite came out the other end, the orc ship slowly disintegrating in its wake.
We have called attention to ourselves, said Tikal.
There were other ships coming for them now. On the central picked screen above the pilot's controls, the target area of the attack moon became more and more defined. The orc ships came from both sides of the huge base, firing continuously. There was no point in disguise now, and Tikal used the engines to move the termite back and forth. The aim of the Greenskins was so rushed, so wild, that his efforts were enough to weave the ship through the web of shells, and the orc vessels began to destroy each other with their own crossfire. Ramships appeared to port and starboard. Even if they didn't crack the termite's hull, their impact would be enough to knock it from its course. Tikal blasted the engines, forcing the last bit of speed he could from the spear of fire, racing the ramships to the surface. The shattered remains of the Klostzats loomed closer, still captures cascading across the picked screen with the speed of a bolter firing at full burst. The sight of the wreckage grieved Vulcan. He saluted the courage of the crew who had fought to the last extremity, but he felt their loss too. He believed that he and the Sons of Nocturne had arrived in time to save the Terran 18th. Even so, his thoughts were now for all those who had died in the battle for the Taras division. For them, the fleet from Nocturne had come far too late. The ramships angled in, their courses beyond reckless.
Those vessels have doomed themselves,
Tikal said, appalled. He had seen every manner of sadistic ferocity in the battles to free Nocturne from the Dusk Wraiths, but this was his first encounter with the relentless, mindless savagery of the orcs.
Do they think so little of their own lives?
They do not think in those terms, said Vulcan. It has not occurred to them that they will die. Their only goal is our destruction. This is what makes them so dangerous. This is why they must be exterminated.
As he spoke, Vulcan's eyes flicked from screen to screen, estimating speed and trajectories. The race was too close to call. The ruins of the Klostzats became a skeleton. The remains of the great hull reached up from the surface of the attack moon, jagged, gnarled, clutching, stabbing. The termite descended into the abstraction of metal, kilometers high. The ramships came after it, and the fire from the other orc ships converged into a blistering attack. The barrage took out one of the pursuing vessels. Its engines exploded and it spun, a battering ram hundreds of meters long, careening in a death spiral, colliding with the sky-reaching shards of the Klotzsatz. Now, picked screens on all sides of the pilot's compartment showed nothing but the wreckage of the great ship. The termite descended through the cold remains of an immense pyre. Vulcan saw nothing that resembled a ship any longer. There was only a torn vastness, a twisted metal cry of pride and despair. The second ram ship hammered its way through the ruined plate. The impact did not stop the ship, but did slow it. The termite gained a few more seconds in the race. The drill head accelerated to full speed, the hull trembling and whining with its energy.
"We stab at thee," Vulcan growled at the orc planetoid.
Then came the impact of a sword striking home. The termite roared as its spinning head ground through the crust of the base. Behind it came another roar, the apocalyptic thunder of the ramship hitting with the force of a meteor.